Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
It's not that men don't have emotions, although their wives are convinced they don't have any emotions.
The late Dr. David Stoop on Focus on the Family Minute.
I had a couple in my office where she was extremely angry. And then she sat there with her arms folded and just stared at me. And I said, you're very angry, aren't you? And she says, how astute. She was talking and she started crying, really crying heavily. And I turned to him. I said, what are you feeling right now as you watch your wife feel so pained? And he said, well, I said, don't tell me what you think. Tell me what you feel. He couldn't say a word. And so I started through a list of feelings. Do you feel this? Do you feel this? And he could think a minute and say yes and say no. And his wife all of a sudden stopped crying. She said, you mean he has emotions? And he just didn't have the language for emotions.
Right. Improve your communication by verbalizing your emotions. More from Dr. Stoop at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles. Paso Robles Glass is exclusively presenting the new Milgard Trinzic Series windows and doors. If you're looking for a vinyl window frame that is contemporary with modern crisp lines, you'll love the new Trinzic Series from Milgard and Paso Robles Glass. Give your home a clean, sleek look with less vinyl and more glass to enjoy your view. Whether it's new construction or replacement, Paso Robles Glass has a window for you. And remember, they are the replacement window masters. Call Paso Robles Glass for your free in-home sales consultation for Milgard Trinzic windows and doors. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014. That's 238-4014 for Paso Robles Glass.
Get it fast, save some cash. Paso Glass is where it's at.
Hello everyone, this is Dora Carey with Orange Dot Quilts. My little shop recently moved to a larger location and the space is already brimming with gorgeous fabric, new patterns, kits, finished quilts, gifts, and so much more. Stop by to check out the new shop located at the corner of 10th and Pine in Paso Robles, right across from the police station. We are open Tuesday to Saturday from 11 to 5. At Orange Dot Quilts, we offer not only fabric but also sewing inspiration and quilting advice, and we are always happy to see you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Hey everyone, it's Susanna Luthi with Free Talk California. Welcome back. I wanted to start off this hour with some inspiring words from America the Beautiful, which I was listening to as part of a kind of patriotic kids tape with my kids who are with me today. And this line really struck me. It's from one of the other verses that we don't often hear. And it goes, oh, beautiful for heroes proved in liberating strife, who more than self their country loved and mercy more than life. And I just thought, you know, that's the kind of courage that is required if we're going to maintain our liberty. If we're scared to speak up for our kids in public schools because of something administrators would say, we're afraid to speak up socially because of things our friends might say, we might not deserve to keep the republic, as Benjamin Franklin once said. We've given you a republic if you can keep it. So anyway, wanted to share that. That was just a beautiful little moment with my kids as we were driving into Paso today. Anyway, lots of good stuff this hour. My guest is Mae Mailman, who is the director of the Independent Women's Law Center. She is also a former attorney with the former Donald Trump administration. She is part of the existential battle for protecting women in this onslaught of gender madness. And we will be focusing today on the Title IX regulations, which were rewritten by President Joe Biden. Was it last month or 2 months ago? And she is helping spearhead litigation to overturn those rules, which basically nationwide, unilaterally, without an act of Congress, said that there is no such thing as single sex locker rooms and sports in K-12 and universities even. So anyway, at least two federal judges, we'll get a full update from her, but I know at least two federal courts have blocked that regulation in a slew of states that have sued, and she will be able to weigh in on all kinds of other issues kind of related, where she and her organization are really, really fighting our battles, women's battles for us. So that will be up later this hour, but first some California news. I wanted to pick up where we left off last week with a caller who raised concerns about California being one of the few states to allow child marriage and how it facilitates sex trafficking. I was actually unaware of the depth of this issue and promised to look into it, and I have. So I wanted to just report back on what I found, because it turns out this was a very big controversy this legislative year and I completely missed it. There's only so much that you can follow in our California legislature. So there has been an attempt over several years to repeal California's child marriage allowance. California is actually one of seven states that has no minimum age to allow marriage. As long as a judge and some kind of guardian signs off, kids of any age can be married off in California. Go figure. And UNICEF has made this a rallying cry because they want to end child marriage by 2030. They talk about California as one of the really, really egregious examples of allowing it. And this year, there was another attempt to repeal the child marriage law. But guess who helped kill it? I'll give you a few guesses, and you'd probably be right. Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood of California was one of the groups that pressured a key lawmaker who was supposed to host the first hearing to cancel the hearing. I guess one ploy that is often used in the California legislature is if something is going to drum up a lot of public anger, if there's a bill that's heard and the powers that be don't want it to pass, but they also don't want the public to really know, they will just not hold a hearing on it. So that's what happened. So ACLU is another group, Planned Parenthood, ACLU, and then a group that you may not have heard of. It's just kind of this left-wing group that gets involved in California politics. It's Oakland-based. It's called the National Center for Youth Law. So those three groups teamed up to kill it. They pressured the super progressive lawmaker from San Jose. His name is Assemblyman Ash Kalra. He is one of the most progressive left-wing legislators in California, which says a lot. And he basically denied that the bill should even get a hearing. So that was pretty shocking. I do want to read. I was able to get a copy of the opposition letter, which was not public, from ACLU and Planned Parenthood and this other group. This is some of their stated reasoning for opposing the repeal of California's child marriage allowance. Quote, "Our organizations wholeheartedly agree that young people deserve to lead healthy, safe, and fulfilling lives." Oh, thank you. "We support what we believe are the intentions of the bill to address the harms of coerced and abusive relationships on young people and protect them from abuse. However, we also strongly believe in and support self-determination and bodily autonomy for all people, including young people who are pregnant and or parenting. So this is very much in line with the push to lower the age of consent in our state, which we have seen constantly. And then the letter goes on to say, in a post-Dobbs world, that's referring to the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade and handing over the issue of abortion to the states, we should be investing in approaches that expand, not remove, access to care and resources for young people. So again, letting kids of any age be married off to whoever is definitely going to help expand access to care and resources. I'm assuming since this is Planned Parenthood, that means abortion and contraception. Instead of a total ban on marriages for minors, we urge legislators and advocates to continue advancing policies to expand access to culturally specific education about healthy relationships and the rights for young people to make decisions about their health and their families, and to remove barriers to resources and interventions for young people who do find themselves in abusive and coerced relationships. We look forward to supporting efforts to enact evidence-based solutions, whatever those are. Maybe banning 12-year-olds from being allowed to be married off and sold into a marriage with an adult might be an evidence-based solution, but I digress. To protect youth from coercion and abuse and fully understand the scope and contours of the problem to mitigate them. So that's about a lot of word salad, but basically they want to keep allowing these minors' marriages. According to a group that opposes child marriages, it's called Unchained at Last, more than 8,000 California children are entered into marriage every year, and the annual number has been increasing in recent years. As of 2021, more than 14,000 minors living in California already had been married. 100% of these marriages would have been considered a sex crime outside of marriage because a child marriage license is a get-out-of-jail-free card for a would-be child rapist. And an actress who is kind of an activist on feminist issues, and she helped launch the Me Too movement. She isn't someone I always agree with, but she was really pushing for the repeal. Her name is Alyssa Milano, and she teamed up with a child marriage survivor in an op-ed in the San Jose Mercury News, which happens to be in Ash Kalra's district. He's the one who killed the repeal movement, wouldn't even let it get a hearing. And talking about Planned Parenthood and ACLU, they write, quote, their arguments are perplexing. They claim banning child marriage would drive minors in abusive relationships underground and out of reach of social services. Does anyone believe a minor in an abusive dating relationship benefits from marrying their abuser, or that a minor with abusive parents can access social services only if their parents enter them into marriage? They also claim that banning child marriage would be denying these young people the right to marry, but minors do not have that right. A judge and a parent or guardian may enter them into marriage with no real recourse for a minor who does not want to marry. And just in March of this year, as the California measure was being introduced, UNICEF posted an appeal specifically to end child marriage in California. And their call to action started with this anecdote. Janet was only 14, a Southern California ninth grader, when she was introduced to the 21-year-old man who would soon become her husband. Her mother would, quote, have him over and sleep on the couch. I thought, why is he here? Next thing I know, I'm at his place, said Janet, now a 56-year-old activist working to end child marriage. I know the truth now. She sold me. So anyway, that story, thank you to the last week's caller for flagging that to me. That was pretty shocking, and it's not surprising that the ACLU and Planned Parenthood did not want a hearing on that, because if they oppose this, that's not exactly a good look. You know, they're pushing all kinds of unpopular things, and they are pushing, you know, really lowering the age of consent for all things, you know, for they don't want parental. They've successfully pushed laws to prevent California parents from knowing if their minor child gets an abortion or is even on the pill or anything like that. And also pushing for gender medicine as well, hormones, puberty blockers, etc. And yet they are supporting no limits on the age of a child who can marry. The connection to child trafficking has also been mentioned by an anti-slavery group called Freedom United. They wrote about this bill as well. And they say, you know, some minors view marriage as an escape from challenging home environments marked by addiction or unmet mental health needs. Yet they often transition from one perilous situation to another, a shift that almost invariably includes sexual abuse. These marriages isolate children from supportive networks like family and friends, exposing them to predatory adults who exploit their vulnerability. This exploitation is exacerbated in California, where the absence of a minimum marriage age allows adults, both domestic and foreign, to marry minors, significantly facilitating trafficking and abuse under the guise of marriage. So there we go. Anyway, we have a few minutes before our messages from our sponsors. I wanted to give a quick update on Assembly Bill 1955. That is the late-breaking attempt in the legislature to enshrine secret school gender transitions of kids into law. It is up for its final votes in the Assembly this week. I just heard word this morning that there is a kind of vote sneaked in the committee at 1:30 this afternoon, so just in a few minutes. And it has been allowed to bypass a fiscal committee that's supposed to vet any bill that's predicted to cost California taxpayers money. And the fact that they were able to sneak it past this committee or hold it in this committee is pretty shady, because that does not follow the legislature's own rules for all legislation. Legislative analysts have said this measure, because it is so unpopular and it enshrines a systemic issue in schools, is probably going to be very expensive because of all the lawsuits it will likely provoke. The bill's last analysis, and this is from the state legislature itself, states that the bill could result in potential legal costs to local educational agencies, that means us local taxpayers, should there be lawsuits filed as a result of the bill's prohibition. The bill's prohibition on schools alerting parents if their kids are masquerading as a different gender or identity at school. The extent of these costs is unknown. And the state would need to reimburse school districts for any activities the Commission on State Mandates determines to be a reimbursable state mandate. So, and then even the Department of Justice, as you know, the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, our Attorney General, has been really forceful on this issue, really trying to force it down everyone's throat. They're saying that if this bill passes, it's likely to be challenged and potentially blocked, and that it's going to cost the state a lot of money to enforce. We do have a caller coming in. Welcome, you're on the air.
I just want you to clarify, does that bill make it illegal for schools to notify the parents, or does it just make it so that the district can ban teachers from...
Yes, it makes it illegal for the schools to tell parents if their kids are identifying as a different gender.
So if I were to go to the school and say, hey, my kids do this line, who they can't tell me.
They can't tell you. Yes. And that's kind of informal.
Dude, and I'll be clean here, but people need to get the heck out of here. This is just insane.
And I have to say that that's informal guidance now, and they're just basically losing in court over and over again. And so that's why the legislature last minute is trying to shove this legislation, because they've been losing in court over this. And
I'm sorry, that's clown ludicrous.
Yep.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I'd like to say have a good day, but we're in California.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, if people want to call in, it does make a difference. There are a lot of parents and a lot of grassroots activists really calling in. So Assembly Bill 1955. I will tell you, because I was a Politico when I first started covering California, and people talked to me a little bit more in Sacramento. But I know for a fact that some of the really hefty COVID regulations, like that when they were trying to do the employer COVID vaccine mandate, that got killed because of so many angry calls. So angry calls do work to put the pressure on. And also remember that if this passes, which it will likely pass, but it does have to get signed by Governor Newsom, who has national ambitions. So when the temperature is hot on this, it does make a difference. So, FYI.
Well, this is the last thing I'll say. Well, who knows? Maybe it should pass, and then everybody will just sue everybody, and we'll all be rich. Obviously,
I think a lot more parents. It is interesting because there's a growing number of law firms that are offering to take these cases pro bono.
Stuff in 10, 15 years. Like, were you told this and this in school? You might have a case and call for eligibility.
Well, it's already happening. I mean, two districts have paid out six-figure settlements over this.
Yeah, never bet against an attorney to make money on.
Exactly.
All right, take it easy.
Thank you for your call. Yeah, so yes, this definitely is an answer to all the lawsuits. So timid parents out there, there's really no reason to be timid at this point. The attorney general himself is acknowledging that this law, if it passes, it's just going to draw more lawsuits. And I've heard that from other people. Sarah Parshall Perry is a legal expert at the Heritage Foundation, and she follows this nationwide. And she says basically the reason that no state has passed this into law is because it is so blatantly illegal and unconstitutional that they'll lose in court and it will just be costly. So it is kind of a challenge. Who knows what will come of this. Anyway, stay with us through these messages from our sponsors. I will be right back with Mae Mailman. I'm sorry about that. You're listening to Free Talk California here on KPRL, AM 1230, 99.7 FM.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Investigators searching for a motive after 9 people were injured at a suburban Detroit water park shooting over the weekend. A suspect is in custody. Fox's Mike Tobin.
No one knows why Michael William Nash opened fire on the water park. He had no criminal history, no connection with the water park. There are indications he struggled with mental health.
The youngest victims, just 4 and 8 years old. The Biden-Harris campaign receiving a bump in cash over the weekend after the president attended a fundraiser. Fox's Rich Edson explains several celebrities were on hand for the Los Angeles event.
Former President Barack Obama, among others, Barbara Streisand, Julia Roberts, George Clooney, and others at the Peacock Theater. The campaign says it raised more than $30 million at the event.
And Biden's campaign plans to use $50 million in an advertising blitz in battleground states, highlighting Donald Trump's felony conviction. America is listening to Fox News.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company has the parts and expertise to repair any overhead door. From replacing weather stripping or garage door spring repair to programming garage door openers, their service teams are available for prompt dispatch to your home or business. Quality products and superior service. Hammond Overhead Door Company. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. Waiting to get in touch with Mae for our segment. So I will continue on with the California news until we are able to get in touch with her. This was a crazy story that I kind of came across because it was only briefly covered by a San Francisco outlet. And it has to do with more reparations, race reparations. We've talked about this on the show. The California effort has kind of crashed and burned. San Francisco had this big headline-grabbing effort where they wanted to give $5 million to every eligible Black resident. Obviously, that crashed and burned. Oh, and here we go. I will bring that back later. I think we have May here. Welcome, May. Hello? May, are you with us? All right, that did not work. Hopefully we let me try again. Welcome, you're on the air. Sorry about that. We will figure this out, I promise. So I'll continue on this quick reparations story. So Oakland apparently also had a reparations plan. As you all know, Oakland is having, if you've been up to Oakland lately, you know that Oakland has a lot of problems. They're also hugely in debt. Anyway, last year, apparently they wanted to do a reparations plan as well. They earmarked about $51,000 and said and decided to appoint a commission that was going to decide a reparations plan. And then they gave it a deadline, I believe, of July, so in a couple of weeks. Well, it turns out that the people who were appointed to this reparations panel to come up with a reparations plan for Oakland taxpayers to pay to, it's not quite sure even who would be eligible for this, but to pay, I guess, to Black residents, they have come back and they say they want $5 million just to come up with a plan. They also want 2 years just to write a plan. So 2 years, $5 million. I looked up who the person was who is in charge of this panel. Her name is Deborah Gorman, and she is the president of a left-wing group called the Greenlining Institute. It's based in Oakland. And it lobbies the California legislature to subsidize utilities and low-carbon energy. And it also pushes for, quote, race-aware and, quote, race-based tech and banking policies. Anyway, she's the one heading it. She said that it would be really hard to keep the people who are in charge of writing the plan motivated if they don't know that there's a lot of money behind it. So $5 million. This is a city that reported a $117 million shortfall this fiscal year and is likely facing a $175 million shortfall next year. I looked up this. So Deborah Gorman, who is in charge of this plan, she herself makes a lot of money from this organization that she's a part of. In 2022, which was the last year where I could find tax filings, she made more than $340,000 in her role there. So that's happening in Oakland. I thought maybe the reparations push might be dying down, but that is the ask. It's unclear if Oakland would pony up the money, as you know, they're in bad shape. The progressive mayor is facing a recall, and so it's very unlikely that this will happen. Anyway, it appears we have May Mailman on the phone. Let's try this again. Welcome, May. Are you with us?
Yes.
Perfect. So happy. So happy about this. I'm so excited to talk to you. So
great. Me too.
Introduce you to everyone. You are the director of the Independent Women's Forum. There's so much to ask you about. You're at the forefront of what I think is just kind of the existential fight of our time for women today. And you're putting out fires on every front. But I wanted to start with a big one, which was President Joe Biden's complete overhaul of Title IX.
Yep.
And yes, it's guarantee of a female sports category and basic female rights in education. So maybe first to start off, could you review very quickly how the president was able to rewrite this statute without using Congress and what exactly he was aiming to do with this very sweeping regulation?
Well, you can't rewrite Title IX without going through Congress, but he was basically mimicking Obama in a sense, but also the Supreme Court has emboldened gender ideology through one of their decisions. So also trying to overapply that law, but basically just took Title IX's prohibition on discrimination on the basis of sex to say that anything where sex is a part of your decision making, that, you know, Title IX can touch that. And that's kind of how they loop in gender identity. Now, that doesn't legally make sense for a lot of reasons, which is why now two different courts have issued injunctions and there are 9 pending cases. So I assume that there will be 9 injunctions by the time this is all over.
So it basically renders Title IX useless because it replaces sex with gender identity. Is that more or less, is that oversimplifying or is that correct?
It is. You know, there's so much wrong with this rule, and it, in a sense, it doesn't say that it's replacing sex with gender identity. It says that it's saying discrimination on the basis of sex includes discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And so, in theory, that sounds nice, but in practice, what it means is exactly what you said, which is they are going to replace sex-based discrimination with gender identity-based discrimination because the two cannot live in harmony. Like, you're either letting men into women's locker rooms or you're not.
Right, right. When did this rule come out again? Was it April or May?
I think it was April.
Yeah, I think so. And one thing that was really noticeable to me, just because I care about this issue so deeply, was there was basically a media blackout. In the mainstream, you saw some headlines saying how it enshrined rights for transgender people, but that was it. There was no analysis of what it actually did. And I can't help thinking, because this is an issue that galvanizes women every time you talk. If you talk to a woman, even the women who have been saying things that I think are nonsense, like trans women are women, even those women that I know hate the idea of boys replacing girls in girls' sports. So this seems like it would be a galvanizing issue for women on par with, you know, the overturn of Roe v. Wade. However, people feel like that. It did galvanize a lot of women. And there hasn't been that same level of universal outcry. Do you think that is caused by the media blackout fundamentally? And why do you think the media was so silent about this rule, considering how sweeping it is?
So I don't think it's the media that the media silence that's really at issue here. There, for some reason, is just liberal mind virus where people know that they can't say anything about this issue because somehow that'll be bad. So, and it's almost like the media is following the cues here rather than even leading it, where you have very committed progressive organizations like the National Women's Law Center that, and this is what they say in briefing, like this is not even hidden. They say that if you recognize women's rights to have their own locker room or to have their own sports, then you are racist. I mean, that's something that they've actually put in court. So,
oh, wow. This is the Biden administration that put it in court?
No, this is like a progressive organization called the National Women's Law Center.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, for it.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're a media organization and you're going to get slammed as racist if you recognize women's rights, then you're going to be a little cautious because this is a super, like, weird space where, you know, 70 to 80% of Americans agree that women should have women's sports and women's spaces. So in a sense, you should hear it. That's more support than abortion has, right? So, like, you should hear right. more people saying it, and yet you're not. And the question is why? And it's because the forces that are saying you can't say anything are so aggressive that if you recognize women, you're killing people, that you're going to cause trans people to kill themselves. So now you're a racist and you're a murderer. I mean, like, it's just so charged that even women who do believe in their own spaces and sports, or even media organizations that do believe that, they can't say it because then they're a murderer.
Right. I came across this last year. I did a story because obviously the Biden administration policy on Title IX really follows what's been law in California for a number of years, but no one really realized it because gender ideology wasn't everywhere in your face yet. But last year we have more and more boys and girls sports here in high school. And so last year there was a lot of uproar because two champion statewide track spots were taken by boys in girls track. And I did a story just talking to all the parents, and it was very difficult to get any of the women and the mothers or the coaches to speak on the record. A few did, but most were really terrified to. And one of the coaches who spoke out, he was a big time guy in San Francisco, didn't really have much fear. He'd actually been fired from his volunteer coaching job for speaking out against it. So he just didn't care. But other mothers were terrified over any kind of identifying feature, including any detail about them in the story where they'd be identified, saying that their families would lose their livelihoods. So I do understand that, but it's getting harder to take because it's how will this end if the silence continues? You know, it's definitely an issue where the more people speak up, the less power these people have.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit getting off topic, but there was just a huge case coming out of the First Circuit where a kid wore a school t-shirt that said there are only two genders, and they told the kid he couldn't wear it. And the kid sued to basically say, I'm not offending anybody. I'm not saying, like, anyone deserves any less. Like, I'm just literally, this is my shirt. It's not directed at any person specifically. And the First Circuit Court of Appeals said that the school was correct in telling the kid that he had no right to wear that shirt. You do not have the right to say that there are two genders in school, which is crazy. Like, what are they learning in school if you can't say that? I mean, what? And then even just recently, the New York City School Board removed a elected member who all she wanted to do was to hear perspectives on what the sports policy should be. So they right now have gender identity-based sports, but, like, hey, we didn't ask the women about this. We didn't really, like, investigate this. I would like to kind of think about this more. Okay. Not even change it. Just, I want to do, like, a listening tour. And she just got removed from the school board for wanting to do a listening tour. So,
oh, wow.
You know, why is there silence? It's like, because if anyone opens their mouth, then they are a target, and that's scary.
Yeah. I did find, so as you mentioned, there have been two courts now that have issued injunctions against the Biden rule, And just to clarify, these injunctions only apply to the states that were suing against the rule. They're not nationwide. Is that correct?
That's correct. That said, there's still 7 lawsuits that we haven't heard back from yet, so there still could be a nationwide injunction yet.
Right, right. Well, some of the judges' opinions were just so refreshing. I want to read from some. So the Kentucky court, I believe that was today, said, "Oh, we're about to break for ads," but I will just say this real quick. The Kentucky judge said there are 2 sexes, male and female. And that was just so refreshing to hear a judge say that. Anyway, we'll be right back. And they will stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors. Stay with us.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks kicking off the new trading week with gains, with the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notching new record closes. It'll be a busy week for Fed commentary, which could shed some light on the path of interest rate cuts. Big tech gained on AI enthusiasm, boosting the tech-heavy NASDAQ for its 6th straight record close. Shares of Broadcom are on a tear, rising over 5% and building on last week's record run. Broadcom stock has been boosted by news that the chip and software company is planning a 10-for-1 stock split. Shares of Microsoft rose over 1%. Analysts at Wedbush raised their price target on its stock to $550 a share. The Dow winners, Apple, Microsoft, and Home Depot. The Dow decliners, United Health Group, Merck, and Salesforce. The Dow up 189 points. The NASDAQ up 168. S&P 500 up 42. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Donald Trump Jr. here. Since January of 2021, the cost of living has increased by 17.9%. You can't get that money back, but you can stop your losses by diversifying into a gold IRA from my friends at Birch Gold Group. To learn more, get your free info kit on gold IRAs by texting the word SHELTER to 989898. That's SHELTER to the number 989898 to get your free info kit from Birch Gold now.
Message and data rates may apply.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Elite RV and Boat Storage in Paso Robles is now open. They're not your typical open-air dirt lot. Elite RV and Boat Storage is fully fenced, fully paved, and each space is covered. Their state-of-the-art facility includes security and video cameras monitored 24/7 with motion detectors safeguarding every covered parking space. A professional RV wash station with spot-free rinse, vacuum station, trickle charging, air compressor, a dump station, propane, accessory store, and they offer free ice. Open 9 to 5, 7 days a week. Don't let your RV or boat get sunbleached. Allow decal fading or let it deteriorate in the dust.
Hi, this is Kit. Trust your RV and boat to locally owned and operated Elite RV and Boat Storage at 4210 Right Way off of Dry Creek Road next to the Estrella Warburgs Museum. Call Elite RV and Boat Storage at 805-801-3889 or online at EliteRVandStorage.com. Ask about a free month.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. We are talking with Mae Millman from Independent Women's Forum, and we're talking about the Biden rewrite of Title IX, and we do have a caller coming in, so we'll pick that up. Welcome, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was wondering if you had any idea what the repercussions of that dude getting banned, that dude swimmer from Penn State getting banned from the Olympics would be on our Title IX and protection of our American women?
May, can you answer that? Did you hear that question?
Yeah, I did. So, you know, it's funny because my sense is it has almost no repercussions because this was a challenge in front of an international body, an international court applying international standards, not U.S. law. And so U.S. courts don't really copycat or apply reasoning from international courts. So it was the right decision, but unfortunately, no real implications for our law or our decisions or what people think is fair here.
Right, right. And we've seen that with other movements internationally on the on just the whole gender ideology front, whereas Europe is really stepping sure. back, particularly with transitioning minors or stopping it altogether. That hasn't seemed to even hit the radars of our institutions yet. So that seems to be widespread. I wanted to ask, I got a press release last week from our attorney general here in California. He obviously, not surprisingly, is using Californians' taxpayer money to defend Biden's Title IX rule. And I noticed that there were 16 Democratic attorneys general on that letter. There are, I believe, 23 Democratic attorneys general nationwide. So that means that seven, if my math is right, seven Democratic attorneys general did not join the defense of the Title IX regulations. Should I read into that? I mean, I have covered federal legislation and often on these big national polarizing fights, you know, you get every single Democratic attorney general on one side and every single Republican on the other. Is that a sign for hope, or do you not read much into that?
So I guess my one hesitation of reading too much into that is some states have wonky laws. So I used to be the Deputy Solicitor General for the state of Ohio, and there would be some states that were conservative, like New Hampshire, I think was one of them, maybe North Dakota, and they, or South Dakota, that they really didn't join on to a lot of conservative things. And some of the reason was state norms, and some of it was the decision making, even though it is the attorney general who brings legislation, it's actually run by the governor or it's actually run by the state legislature. So there could be some weirdness there. That said, let's see. So you don't see, I think, North Carolina. I'm just looking at, we've got Pennsylvania. So North Carolina has a liberal AG, and yet they're not on here. And I have to think it's because this is just not popular. So, yeah, the fact that I don't see a swing state like North Carolina makes me think that there is some why are we doing this going on?
Yeah, and I've spoken with a few people who said even the timing of this, you know, they delayed doing this regulation for years and years and then released it far enough away from the election where they're kind of hoping it'll disappear into the, disappear in voters' consciousness. There does seem to be some calculation on not publicizing it too much. So,
yeah.
I want to ask you, we have a few minutes left. I want to ask you about an issue that touches my sorority that I was a part of in college, Kappa Kappa Gamma, because you guys have been talking about this case. So basically, I was a terrible sorority member for the record, and I used to feel bad about that, but now I do not. So the national chapter of Kappa Kappa Gamma is fighting tooth and nail to keep a man who is over 6 feet, I think he's something like 240 pounds, in the Wyoming Kappa house. And some of the women in that house have alleged that he leers at them, watches them with an erect man part, makes them highly uncomfortable. I can't imagine this. I mean, I remember the intimacy. I mean, sorority houses are so intimate. I can't imagine this. And the National Kappa Kappa Gamma chapter has responded by saying, basically, you can't define a woman. There's so many ways of defining a woman. And this case especially riles me because I have not been able to get some of my friends from that house angry because they're saying, well, it's about inclusivity. Yes, this instance is really uncomfortable and maybe awful, but we have to be inclusive. I've been trying to get kicked out by registering complaints to the National Kappa Kappa Gamma chapter. I want to get kicked out of lifelong membership, which seems to have happened to some women who are speaking out against this. But I just saw that the sorority sisters in Wyoming who are fighting this just lost an appeal. Can you talk at all about this case and what it means for single sex spaces?
Yeah. So the 10th Circuit dodging the appeal was not ideal, but the basic premise of this case was a breach of fiduciary duty where directors of organizations, generally private organizations can let in who they want. You want to have a just people who identify as something that they're not, fine. Just people who identify as cats. Okay. Have your organization. But the problem is, where you say that you're an organization for women, and then you, in bad faith, rather than having a conversation with these girls, you make them initiate a mail. They told these girls that if they did not say yes to initiating these mails, that it would be a sign of bigotry, which is a reason to be expelled from the sorority. So that, when directors cannot breach their fiduciary duties to organizations like that, the district court said, oh, but they didn't, because initiating a male is fine because woman means man. That we think is wrong, but even still, this case was not really about the definition of woman. It is about bad faith breaches of fiduciary duty. Unfortunately, courts can't remove themselves from this bizarre world we live in, where man means woman. And so there actually is, I think, a slight positive sign to the 10th Circuit. The 10th Circuit decided to completely dodge this case by saying they lacked appellate jurisdiction to consider it. And what that means, and this was three liberal appointed judges, these judges did not affirm the district court. They did not say that man means woman. They said, we really don't want to touch this issue. And so what that means is that they know that the district court was wrong. They know that woman and man are two different words, but they also knew they couldn't say it out loud. And so what they said was, you can't bring this case to us. So there's some positive there, because it means that smart people know that this is ridiculous and are not going to affirm
Right. So that's potentially a good sign, and it will likely go to the Supreme Court.
So, it probably will not go to the Supreme Court in this case. There are federal issues, which is like, you lack appellate jurisdiction. That is a question of, that's a federal question. Like, that could be appealed to the Supreme Court. But the question that people want before the Supreme Court is, does woman mean man? And that type of question is really a state law issue. It's how states interpret contracts. It's state breach of fiduciary duty. And the Supreme Court doesn't review those types of decisions. They let state Supreme Courts or federal courts interpreting state law, those are the final arbiters, basically, of that. So it's unlikely you're going to see the Supreme Court take up that type of question, unless you're in the Title IX context, and then you're dealing with a federal law. So that's why I think this Title IX fight is so important, because it gets some of those questions up to the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have any last words of encouragement on this issue?
I've got some encouragement, but also some, reasons to be fearful. Like, people think that this is an issue that's easy to be won because, as you said, there's signs of encouragement from Europe. The public polling shows 70-plus% of people know what a woman is. You know, there's a lot of common sense behind why women shouldn't have to compete with men in sports. And so those are all encouraging signs. But on the opposite side...
We will have to end on that because we're out of time, but yeah. I'll take
Free Talk
that.
California
thank you so much.
Is brought to you by A-Town Diner and Atascadero
right,
on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.